You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the score.
Third and eight.
And they come again.
Pressure, look out. And he's going to go down again. Rayshon Jenkins comes from the secondary. And for Caleb Williams, who came into the game having been sacked 60 times, that's six more. 66, by far the most in the league this season.
And look at the confusion they're creating. You have Witherspoon, who ends up coming late. Jenkins over here that ends up pressuring. A couple of the guys on the inside end up dropping. The offensive line's confused. Caleb is confused. And give Mike McDonald and that defensive staff a lot of credit for their third down package in creating that confusion.
One, I can keep communicating to the offensive line. And positivity, constructive criticism, things like that to them. And then how I am maybe in the pocket, how I feel about, you know, certain things in the pocket. So they just have it in mind on their conscience. And then that's a cool thing about football is that everything is a work in progress.
That's Caleb Williams talking about his season. 68 sacks, third most all time. David Carr, number one, with 76. Then Randall Cunningham, number two. Caleb Williams, tied for third, along with somebody named David Carr again. Can you imagine being David Carr, man? I mean, two of the top four seasons all time in terms of sack numbers.
I'd be bruised up.
The man, was damaged. Right. It speaks, and Ann Heron here on 670 The Score. And
did you hear what I shouted at you right before we came back from break, by the way?
I did not, sir.
Okay.
What'd you say?
All right. I mean, nothing that's fit for air. It didn't seem like you heard me when I shouted it. Like, you already had your headphones on.
I did. Okay. Did you say it in the talkback button?
Well, I let them know in the talkback button. No, but I shouted it at you outside of the talkback.
Missed
button.
It.
Yeah.
Well, no, you want to let the listeners in on it?
Well, I don't know.
Feel like you should.
If Tanny's got a dump button ready. But no, I shouted profanity.
Actually, today, Tanny didn't get the dump button ready. I texted him last night. I said, dude, just be ready tomorrow. And he forgot to get the
button ready. Right, the notoriously potty-mouthed Anthony Heron.
No, but you have to say it now because one of these things that we don't like to do is tell the listener that, hey, I have this thought that I really want to say, but I can't tell you.
I'm generally not a fan of, like, hey, it's okay, say it. We'll just dump it, especially with the new equipment here. Like, yesterday, I hit the dump button and there was a little bit of a delay in the delay.
Oh, now you got to say it.
So, no, that's not what that means.
Is that what that means?
This new equipment? I mean, is it going well?
Everything.
They appear to be in the same position.
Turn your mic off. I'm going to come in there, tell me what it is, and then I'll tell you if you could say it.
He told us during the break.
I heard it, yeah. Well, no, now this is theater.
Everybody's doing a great job.
He told Speaks to get your bleep together. Right. Was that what it was?
Yeah. Okay, but that's good enough. He could have just said that.
But yeah, but now Shane's in here, though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he came all the way over here. I got to tell him. I'm going to turn my mic off and I'm going to say it to him.
Yeah. I don't know. All right, go ahead.
You're not going to be able to say it on the air.
Forget it.
Okay, yeah. I got it now. Yeah, Tanner, you paraphrased beautifully. All right, well, my bleep is together.
Okay.
It is so together.
Apparently not.
It is so Taguchi. That was my favorite thing about that player, so Taguchi, is just how Taguchi he was. That guy was so Taguchi.
Yeah, I like what you're doing there.
Ant?
Okay, but real quick, now the listener doesn't know why Ant was telling you to get it together.
Oh. Well, that's fair.
Yeah, but that's
okay. We can't have secrets out here?
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you get anxiety. You know, sometimes a little anxiety.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, see me.
Secrets make
fine.
Friends.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, yeah. It's
Robert Downey Jr., by the way, very, very good in that bomb movie.
Which one?
It kind of reminded me of that time that Danny spoiled that movie for you.
Oh, I see. I see.
Sorry, yeah, that was stupid.
There was a Bond film?
Sorry about that, guys.
It's time for me to get my bleep together.
I got to get my stuff together. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. So one of the things I'm most excited about,
right.
Ben Johnson teaching Caleb Williams and really teaching the whole offense, and I don't know exactly how to even discuss it because sacks are often put on the offensive line or they're put on the quarterback. But it's really on both, right? It's like there is a relationship between the quarterback and the offensive line, pre-snap and during, and just conversationally all throughout the season as well, about, you know, where a quarterback has to know what his offensive line can do and help them out by getting rid of the ball. And the offensive line obviously has to help their guy. It's not like every quarterback is expected to go back and have 3.5 seconds with which to hold the ball and the offensive line is blocking perfectly. You know, right. Fix the O-line and there won't be sacks. If you don't get rid of the ball quickly, if you don't, you know, trust your clock and everything. So this relationship between the quarterback and the offensive line, this understanding that clearly Jared Goff and a very good Lions offensive line have is something I'm really looking forward to Ben Johnson teaching.
I feel like this show is having a bad, a real negative influence on me right now because now I have all this unnecessary censorship in my head where you began talking about being very excited about Ben Johnson and then you referenced sacks.
Yes.
And then you referenced the clock. And now I'm like, what you're saying makes sense.
Kay.
I just want you to know the reason I'm snickering while I'm looking at you is because I have all this unnecessary censorship just going through my head.
Understood.
While you're describing this.
Understood.
But what you're saying does make perfect sense that we think of him as this great football teacher, certainly a great schematic mind, if nothing else. Now, he had a veteran quarterback to work with in Jared Goff in Detroit, who'd been through the ringer, who'd seen a million different defenses, who'd had a variety of play callers that he'd worked with, even going back to Jeff Fisher as the head coach and whoever was the OC with the Rams during his rookie year in the mess that was in his rookie season. So he's ridden that wave throughout his career. But all that is still data. You're still diagnosing the opposing defense. You're still going through the mechanics of being a quarterback at the professional level. You're still taking all those sacks in game and figuring out as you go back and evaluate the film where you messed up, what you could have done differently, who was, you know, the read you could have gotten the ball out to. So all that time on task still does matter. So all these hits, all these sacks that Caleb took during his rookie season should still benefit him with a coach like Ben Johnson coming in because what Caleb went through as a rookie, there was a whole lot of time holding the football. A whole lot of sacks that were taken. There was also a lot of positive to work through also in the rookie season that he just went through, what he just experienced historically would have been viewed in the context of that's a very passable, if not quality, rookie year for a young quarterback. It's just now got the modern context of seeing C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels back-to-back years. You go back to Joe Burrow, quality rookie season as well.
Yeah.
So we see the context of other guys who've come, you know, gone really high in the draft and been able to come in and look comfortable more consistently than Caleb did.
Mm-hmm.
But just in historical context, for a guy who's played 3 years worth of college football, it's a lot of positive on his rookie film. So Ben Johnson does have this what's still a moldable lump of clay to work with. But, you know, the idea of him being this molder of young quarterbacks, he hasn't actually had to do that before.
So let's listen to Nick Allegretti, Chicagoland's own, the former guard for the Kansas City Chiefs, and then the guard for the Washington Commanders. And first we had him on this show talking about Patrick Mahomes, and then he talked about Jaden Daniels. You'll hear both, but it speaks directly to this issue. And I want you to tell me, when we get through all this, if this is something that Caleb has started to learn or if he has to start start fresh all over again. This is Allegretti on how Patrick Mahomes handled O-line protections in Kansas City.
I don't know if he'll ever get credit for the football IQ that he has. He made our job at O-line as easy as he possibly could. Calling the protections, reading coverages, and, you know, we'd walk up to the line of scrimmage, and you'd be in the midst of the game, not, you know, maybe you're not sure exactly what's coming, but he'd be like, all right, five down that – oh, sorry. He'd be like, hey, five down 54, 57 comes, I got him. The confidence in himself to just be like, all right, I think 54 is coming. If he comes, O-line's got him. If I'm wrong, I know I'm wrong. 57's coming. I'll throw hot off him. And it's just like you hear the quarterback say that. You're like, all right, we'll block those five guys. Don't got to worry about the other guy if he comes. And normally if he's wrong, he would dice the defense up even more. So just a special talent physically, but the mental side of his game is impressive and something he'll probably not get credit for because it's hard to really see what he does in protections and with rush lanes when he has pressure escaping. All that stuff, it's pretty impressive.
Thought that's really cool insider stuff to get from a guy who played in front of Pat Mahomes, that right. We think of him as this incredible swashbuckling playmaker, but here he is knowing the protections so well that he makes the offensive line better on every single play.
And he's evolved into that point over the years, without a doubt. And Patrick Mahomes deserves a lot of credit for how he's continued to evolve throughout his career, because the innate ability to improvise and to kind of color outside the lines of the schematic design of a play, a lot of that is just kind of intrinsically in him. But to continue to refine his ability to be a snap-in, snap-out, mechanically sound QB and a mentally, you know, adept quarterback at everything he's seeing on the field, that played out so much this season with the limits of the playmakers around him, and still to be able to, you know, end up, you know, with a two-loss season because they didn't do anything in the regular season finale. But this version of Pat Mahomes, that he physically is capable of being far more than what we saw this year, obviously, but he was able to just kind of pare his game down into what the Chiefs needed him to be this season. Whereas with Caleb, you need him to more quickly be able to expand what he can be mentally for the Bears this year.
All right, so there's Pat Mahomes, the perspective on Mahomes. How about Jaden Daniels? So that was the follow-up. Is how did Jaden Daniels do as a rookie? And this is, of course, with Caleb in mind, to ask Nick Allegretti, who played in front of Jaden Daniels, how he handled the protections this year.
He did a tremendous job. So yeah, that was new for me this year, obviously leaving Pat where it was, you know, rinse and repeat. We watched the blitzes. You'd seen pretty much all of them before, and we'd get our plan together. With Jay, it was a little bit new. You know, he was calling, or offensive line was calling a lot of the protections, and he was learning the way that we call them. With the new center this year with Tyler, and he picked it up as the season went along. And then I think the rush lanes thing, like I mentioned with Pat, Jaden really did a great job learning. Because you're gonna, you know, there's gonna be pressure. The defensive linemen are too good in this league to not expect any pressure. So to be able to handle the pressure, know where your escape lanes are, whether it's with your feet or, you know, dropping the ball off to, you know, the running back. He did a great job with that. And then I think if you look at the Tampa game we had in that wild card round, Todd Bowles does an incredible job with the pressures that they bring. We're watching, we played in week one, and then we're watching the tape from the year and watching incredible O-lines, incredible quarterbacks, having free runners every game. It's really hard to be able to pick up their pressures the way that they have, you know, outside backer, defensive end type bodies that can play anywhere from pretty much a four tech to dropping in coverage. I mean, they're dropping Anthony Nelson. They dropped Vita. I mean, the way that they were able to drop pressures was difficult, and we came up with a plan about midway through the week. We didn't like it. It was not making sense to Jay, to a couple of the linemen. So we devised another plan, and we were pretty happy with that plan. We went into the game. First third down, Jay recognizes it's one of these pressures that it have confused teams all year. Checks us to the check that we put in. We picked it up. The second time, he left our original call on, which was our first way we picked it up, and we picked it up that way too. So we ended up picking it up two different ways, and we kind of put their coordinator in a little bit of a blender that way, because I don't know if any team had picked it up that way. And for Jay to be able to walk out there first third down of a playoff game, see this seven up front and get the O-line going in the right direction as a rookie, I mean, that's some rare stuff.
So that's pretty cool to hear about Jaden Daniels' progression over the course of the year. And ultimately, in the playoffs, to be that good at dealing with protections as a rookie quarterback.
And when you're in a system that starts off very QB-friendly early in the year, and then you sort of get spoon-fed more and more responsibility mentally and pre-snap throughout the year, what stands out to me about that sound is that it's the inverse of what was done with Caleb last season. Shane Waldron threw everything at Caleb Williams from the jump. And I get it. He's supposed to be this generational prospect and all these other things. But you open up the regular season and think about all those times pre-snap where we saw Caleb with late motions and trading protections and evaluating the defense and going with the dummy cadence and then adjusting again over and over again. And that just bogged down the offense so much. And I wouldn't even necessarily say that Caleb seemed consistently overwhelmed just by that, but just how that can end up manifesting itself in the performance of a quarterback who has all that on his plate pre-snap and then post-snap has to continue to try and read the defense, the full field from within the pocket and make the proper pass with all the side adjustments
so this that is he interesting. And the receivers have. This is a takeaway that I didn't expect, but that makes sense because we talked about it during the course of the year as early on, that Caleb was being asked to do more.
Doing a lot, man. Doing so much for this Bears offense. And by comparison, where Jaden Daniels was in a situation early in the year where the Commanders, literally every game through the first half of the season, were running the ball more than they were throwing it. And you didn't see pre-snap Jaden having to do nearly as much as Caleb was. And also, just by comparison, Jaden Daniels had played a lot more football than Caleb had before getting to the National Football League. You know, he's a five-year player.
I wonder if Coleman Shelton was calling all the protections. He wasn't calling all the protections early.
Well, there was a lot of communication back and forth. Like when you listen to the Parab mics during the game, as you know, things are kind of silent at certain points pre-snap. Yeah. You can certainly hear times where Coleman Shelton is correcting things that Caleb is trying to audibleize too.
But it sounds like Washington just let the center call him. Just let the center call him.
At least early in the year.
At least early.
Exactly. Early in the season until it got to the point where it was obvious and apparent that Jaden Daniels could handle that. That's how you bring a young quarterback along as opposed to just, you know, saying, here's the fire hose approach.
Sure.
And let's ride this thing out.
You're making me want to fire Shane Waldron again. Can I do that again?
He'd warrant it. He would certainly warrant another firing.
My God, the stupidity of doing this and having a head coach with like no offensive philosophy of his own is just letting Shane Waldron do what he wanted. And Shane is like, well, this kid's good. Let me just let him do everything. That's not how you're supposed to do it.
Right.
That's not how you're supposed to bring a young quarterback in.
And that's where, you know, to the point I made a little while ago about Ben Johnson, where he had Jared Goff in Detroit. Ben Johnson is a remarkably creative play caller and a grinder of a coach who's come up with all these different, you know, cool schematic things with the immense talent they have to work with, the versatility of athlete both up front and on the outside. But when you have a quarterback who can handle, sure, you know, all those gigs of RAM that's being thrown at him by Ben Johnson, it's going to be a different situation with a second-year quarterback in the first year in his offensive system.
So that's the question. Does Caleb have to relearn the stuff that he learned in year one because the system is different and his center is going to be different and he's trying to do it with Ben? So, like, is this, do we need to look at this, especially in this issue, this protection issue, calling out protections? Should we look at it as a second rookie year for Caleb Williams? Like, should they let the center call out the protections and not ask Caleb to do it all again? Even though he's had a year under his belt and you'd think maybe he could do it, how should they treat this second year?
I mean, it depends on who the center is. Like, if they draft some rookie center, then you're probably better off with Caleb being that guy. But if you bring in a veteran center who's seen all these defenses around the National Football League, then entrust that to him and take it off of Caleb's plate. But if you got a rookie who's going to be in there, some other young, talented football player, some other team's offensive guard who's only played a little bit of center in the NFL, then you got to make that decision between the two guys. But if you bring some vet in here who's been through these battles in the National Football League, who you know can do it, you know, left and right and all over the place, then yeah, let him do that and just allow Caleb to process a lot of other stuff that the quarterback is still going to have to figure out.
Would you do that if you're Ben Johnson or Ryan Pohl? Would you go, like, would you spend for Drew Dahlman, the center from Atlanta, who's the number one free agent center? It's a very thin class of centers, apparently. But you think Caleb would be best served by having a veteran to as he installs everything else in this office? Think about everything he's going to have to read after the snap, as you're talking about. Everything he's going to have to adjust to.
Yeah.
You're making me think that a veteran center is a much better idea than a rookie one.
I think that is the better scenario between the two. Yes. Now, you have so many pieces up front that you have to replace. And that's what, you know, it'd be one thing if they just needed a center. They need a center They probably need two guards. Who knows? They may need a left tackle as well. So, I mean, there's a lot that you're definitively replacing up front in addition to the center. So that's a part of the jigsaw puzzle that's going to need to be pieced together between Poles and Johnson. And a veteran center is probably your best case scenario. I mean, honestly, like, Coleman Shelton didn't play horrible last year. So, I mean, you know, I doubt Coleman Shelton comes back here. But Coleman Shelton's going to play center for somebody. Like, his film was fine last year. He's going to play center for somebody else in the NFL next season if it's not here in Chicago. You know, can you upgrade? Can you get better than that? Yes, but if it's Coleman Shelton and then Darnell Wright and three other newer, better starters, like, I mean, Coleman Shelton can play winning football in the NFL, I think.
Would you rather have, would you rather spend for Trey Smith? If you could only spend for one interior lineman free agent at the top of the market, would you rather spend for Trey Smith at the guard or Drew Dahlman at the center and go for an inferior free agent guard, maybe Becton or Zeitler from Detroit, or because I like that idea, you know, what would you do spending wise?
I mean, because you have to replace so much, it ends up depending on the compensation. But if you can get Dahlman for, you know, market value and don't feel like you got to really overspend to get it, then I'd probably err on that side of things, you know, just where can we get a quality piece that's going to be a starter next season to get a center, this big hole that's been there so long? Oh, I mean, yeah, Trey Smith is an excellent football player.
I am so back.
Yeah?
Yeah, like this just felt really good. Just talking to Ant and like thinking about the centers. Maybe it's because I'm a center.
I was going to say, that's probably got to be it. It's just the sexy center talk.
It's just, it's just the sexy center talk and thinking about how important we are as a position group, really, in all of team sports.
You speaking collectively for centers of the world.
As I do. Centers of the world unite, you know, and the shoplifters of the world also unite.
Score listeners don't get to hear from many great centers here on the station, obviously.
Just one. And also Ola. Just one. And then also. That beep button.
I am glad that you're back, though, because remember specifically yesterday when you were saying how much you were dreading today?
Yeah. All right. Did I say that part out loud?
You did. Yeah, yesterday in the five.
Oh, no.
Was that before or after Shane threatened to slap you? Before?
It was before. Okay. It was just because I knew Anthony was going to bring up the snub. I knew he was going to bring up the snub, and he was going to embellish it three different ways during transition like he did.
Technically, Spiegs brought up the snub.
That's true. I just embellished it. Damn it, you caught it. He's Anthony Heron. I'm Matt Spiegel. That was good stuff. I like that. I'm going to put that in my back pocket and maybe use it for a Ben's Vision in my future. Spiegel and Holmes is the show. Rob Bradford from Odyssey in Boston and the Baseball is in Boring broadcast has been following the Alex Bregman stuff breathlessly and knows the Red Sox very, very well. Let's talk about them beating out the Cubs for Bregman and what he thinks it means. Next on The Score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I definitely listened to 6-7 Score growing up, for sure. Driving around in the car with my dad, you'd always have it on.
Afternoons on the Score.
I feel like we made a strong offer, but, you know, clearly it wasn't enough. And again, like when you're in free agency, you know, most of the time, player goes the highest bid, and you know, the Red Sox got a great player. They were aggressive, and you know, kudos to them. They got a great player. But I'm glad that we were able, you know, given where we are with our budget right now, I'm glad that we were able to pursue it, and like I said, I'm thankful that we're able to.
That's Jed Hoyer, who spoke today about the Cubs missing out on Alex Bregman. Fascinating moment where like everything has come out after the fact. Supposedly the numbers that Detroit had offered, what, 6 and 171? The numbers that the Red Sox got him for, 3 years, $120 million. 40 is a high average annual value. And then the numbers that the Cubs offered, 4 years at 120 with that 30 average annual value. So let's figure out what the hell just happened here with our buddy Rob Bradford from the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast and Odyssey in Boston, longtime guy. Rob, congrats to the Red Sox. Alex Cora got what he wanted. He got his way,
He sure did. I'm going to tell you, first of all, it's great talking with you. And first of all, it was a terrible night to take a melatonin at 10 o'clock. So that's our lot in life in this world of baseball. We used to be done by Christmas and we could just like mail it in. But yep. No. But and also, I love the fact that Jed Hoyer has acknowledged that the Red Sox got Alex Bregman, because nobody in the Red Sox at camp today, at least the management, they're certainly not acknowledging it, but the players are. But Cora and everybody else, they are not. But we all know that Bregman's going to the Red Sox, and you're right. I think that, and we talked about this, Matt, is that Cora, I don't know if I've ever seen a player that Cora wanted more than Alex Bregman.
So why did they go this high? Did they have to? Did they bid against themselves? To your knowledge, 40 is a really high AAV. And frankly, it's keeping me from being fully angry that the Cubs missed. You know, like it doesn't sit well with me that the Cubs missed, but I don't know that Bregman is good enough to really warrant the 40. Maybe it's a different way of doing business. What are your thoughts on them going that high?
Yeah, so it's an interesting sort of landscape when it came to Bregman, because of the teams involved and how they had to play the market. So before we get to the Cubs and the Red Sox, let's look at the teams that maybe were willing to get to the asking price in years that Boris and Bregman wanted. You know, whether it was Detroit, where I don't think he wanted to go all along. I think Detroit really wanted him, but I just don't think he wanted to go there. Toronto maybe was in the mix, but I don't think he wanted to go there. Houston, we talked about this, Matt. That offer is bizarre, that, you know, the offer that they put out there, 6 years, you thought, well, 6 years, Altuve's going to play left field. He's going to go there. Then crickets. Why was that? Well, that was weird. Was that a real offer? I don't know. And then you get to the Cubs and the Red Sox. And I think what it was is these two teams had the same philosophy. We're not going to give Bregman years, but we're willing to give him a high AAV. Now, obviously, the Red Sox give him a higher AAV. And I think the point of the Red Sox, where they said, we don't mind getting uncomfortable in the world of AAV. We just aren't going to get uncomfortable when it comes to years. And getting uncomfortable was a level which, obviously, they have never paid anyone $40 million a year before. And so it's a level that they never have gone. But we also know how desperate that I think that the Red Sox, as we know now, not only Alex Cora, but ownership, viewed getting Alex Bregman was.
Rob, I'm married to a big-time Red Sox fan, and so I've kind of on the periphery followed the team fairly closely over the years just through her passions for their franchise. And I feel like by comparison, where you've got these two historic brands, and Speaks and I were talking, kind of comparing where Cubs fans are at with things right now, where Red Sox fans are at with things. And I think in comparing the spot the two organizations are in, the advantage I would give to Red Sox fans is that I feel like they don't necessarily miss, quote unquote, as frequently as the Cubs have. And they've kind of stayed in contention, whereas now we've seen multiple times where the Cubs kind of tear things down and then start to build back up since they won the World Series here just over the past decade. Does that feel accurate just for where the Red Sox are at? Does it feel like they're at least a pretty consistently an organization that evaluates the talent they're trying to bring in pretty consistently well?
Well, it's a good question. And my answer up until the last few years would be, yeah, you know, you're talking about four world championships. You're talking about, you know, they made the ALCS in 2021, which isn't long ago. But then you think that they are sort of in it, and then you look up and they finish in last place in 2022, last place in 2023. Last year they go 81 and 81. And all the while, you're not winning the battles that they say they're in for free agency. I mean, the example I give a couple of years ago, Zach Eflin. You got beat by the Tampa Bay Rays for Zach Eflin because you make your price point and you wouldn't come off of it. And yeah, Juan Soto, you missed out. Max Fried, you missed out. So why they went out and got Garrett Crochet, good for you. That's uncomfortable. It always is for GMs. Spending money-wise, you haven't got uncomfortable since Dave Dombrowski left. And this is the first time that they've reversed course with that. So I do think that this is definitely a sea change when it comes to not only the way the Red Sox approach things, but also the perception of how the Red Sox are doing business for a fan base, which we're leaning on Noah Kahn bobblehead nights more and more and more.
See, it's a great line of questioning from Anthony and a real interesting moment because I think the fan bases were in a very similar space where they were thinking, oh, no, these guys are going for something they call sustainability, you know? Go ahead. Respond.
No. We've got like, it's the worst word, man. Like, I get it. We all want sustainability, right? I want sustainability. The Red Sox want sustainability. The Cubs do. It's fine. We get it. You don't want to just be really, really good. You don't want to be the Florida Marlins of the Kevin Brown year and just fall off the cliff. Nobody wants that. I understand that.
Yeah.
But we also can't lose sight of the teams that are succeeding in this day and age of baseball, have the alphas, have the guys, have the foundational players, have the players where little kids are going to wear their uniforms with the names on the back. Those are the teams that are winning. And you know what? Those are the teams that are winning more and more and more and more. Meanwhile, you might have a Guardians pop in. You might have a Rays pop in. Whatever it is, but do we want to win the World Series? Yes or no? That's what should be the question. And if you are going to win the World Series, then you have to get those guys. Well, sorry about the rant.
No, I think that's the thing. There's only a few teams willing to be uncomfortable or to be stupid, you know, depending on how you want to define it, and put themselves into harm's way. For instance, the Red Sox, Sam Kennedy came out, he said it in November, they're willing to go over the tax this year. The Cubs last year went over the tax by $2.85 million, sort of an accident, really. Maybe that bad Trey Mancini money had something to do with it. But so they went over. So they're not going over it this year. So it's like that's the line, right? That's the line of either stupidity or discomfort, depending on how you want to define it.
Yeah, and the tax thing drives me nuts because it comes back to this. Do you want to win? Like, do you want to win a World Series? Yeah, I understand what's good for business, and I understand draft picks getting bumped down and taxes and all that stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, do you want to win a World Series? These guys are billionaires. And I think that everyone gets so twisted about the business models and the luxury tax and all of that. I think it's a microcosm of the problem when baseball and building teams and GMs and front offices now, which is, guys, like we've said this before, it's a very surface level way of thinking, but worry about who you're getting and not who you're giving up. Worry about who you're getting or what you're giving up. If you really think this guy is going to be a difference maker, if you think that Mookie Betts is going to be iconic player with your organization on and off the field, then do whatever it takes to get him, or in the case of the Red Sox, keep him. And that's where I think they lose sight of it.
Anthony, I think baseball's broken, man. This sucks. This stuff sucks. This stuff, like, even a team that has a top 10 payroll, right? Mm-hmm. And has had in the past few years.
Consistently.
And there was even teams in that tier, even the Red Sox tier, now they've busted through. Maybe they'll be top five this year, right? But, like, it's just you end up talking about the money and the business model and deferrals and the tax and all this stuff. A cap and a floor, man. A cap and a floor, and then the conversation is really just about strategy and team building. It makes me wish they'd broken the players' union in '94. Frankly, because we wouldn't have had to spend so much of these last 30 years talking about this stuff, which is boring as all hell, Rob, and you know it.
Yeah. Listen, I said baseball isn't boring. I didn't say baseball labor negotiations aren't boring.
I know, Shane, you don't like it when I say that this stuff is boring. You don't like it. But the money stuff, it is, and here we are.
Rob, he's done it like two times this week where he's just flat out saying he's not interested in something.
I know, and then I talk about it.
Yeah.
I have to.
That's, by the way, that's my next tattoo. Baseball like labor negotiations are absolutely boring.
That's strong.
But it's you know, I do, you know, and you said we need a cap on the floor. The problem, and you're not wrong. I mean, we say this is all the stuff that we need. And unfortunately, there has been some breakthroughs in terms of pitch clock or some rules and that we thought we might never get. But what we won't get is a cap on the floor. What we will get before then is another lockout. You know, and that's the thing that stinks. And that, you know, until then, I don't even want to think about that. Until then,
Sorry.
We'll just avert our eyes. And we'll get riled up over the players that either are going to a team or aren't going to a team.
Yeah, and I mean, until then, and even after that happens, you'll still have the opportunity to, like, looking at it through the football lens. Even in the NFL, we're sitting there evaluating how much of the salary cap does the quarterback take up versus everyone else on the roster. Which position? We were just talking about Caleb Williams and the Bears.
You're right.
Which position do they make that fit into this nice little nestled salary cap puzzle that they have the opportunity to put together? So there's minutia with every sport. And right now, I'm thinking about the, you know, where the Cubs did get Kyle Tucker, and now they miss on Alex Bregman, but both from Houston and, you know, San Diego unloading some of their money, Houston now losing some of their high-value players. When you look at the Astros and what they've done over this stretch of time and how successful they've been, how much of this, like, is there much concern that you have, Rob, that Alex Bregman is boosted, has been bolstered by how incredibly deep and talented the Astros have been? And how does that factor into whether or not you think he's actually worth the money that Boston gave him?
Yeah, you know, so I don't think he's worth $40 million a year. Let's get that out of the way. But you know, you do whatever – I'll say it. I can't be a hypocrite. You have to basically say, okay, worry about what you're getting and focus on what you're getting, not what you're giving up to a certain extent. But, you know, I do think that Houston is obviously trying to turn things over, why you get the Christian Walker and why you get the Isak Paredes. But you know, Cam Smith, the guy going there, you guys know him. That's going to be a stud for them. And they have a good farm system. They'll be okay. And that's why I come back to – the their decision not to bring Bregman back, or that offer supposedly they made to Bregman. It really didn't make a lot of sense after they sort of went down that road of going away from him. Because, all right, if you want to turn things over, you turn things over. You rip off the Band-Aid. You don't go halfway, and you don't give Alex Bregman that money for a guy that's probably going to be declining this playing position that you don't really need. So I think that Alex Bregman absolutely meant more to the Boston Red Sox in a lot of ways than he meant to the Houston Astros, but in large part because I think the Houston Astros were sort of planning for this. They knew what was coming, and they're trying to turn things over.
One win for Alex Cora, one loss for Jed Hoyer, who was clearly disappointed today. Thank you, Rob. You're the best, man. Appreciate you.
All right, my pleasure, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
You got it. It's Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring and Odyssey Boston. He's terrific. Anthony Herron, you are very proud today. You came in here very, very proud. And I bet there are some people in our listening audience who are just as proud as you. Let's discuss next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Good vibes, baby.
Afternoons on The Score.
How you doing, buddy? Have a good day, all right?
The end of transition one time a while back when our guy Danny Parkins, at the end of a 20-minute segment, asked Anthony Herron how he was doing, and then immediately wished him to have a good day.
How you doing, buddy? Have a good day. All right.
Sometimes you're...
I mean, the dismount can be difficult sometimes.
Oh, it can be tricky.
You don't always stick the landing.
You were so proud in the group text thread today, and I suspect a lot of listeners out there can relate to the pride that you have. You live in a house now in the burbs, and what'd you do? What'd you do today?
Oh, man, we got a bunch of snow in the burbs overnight, like all throughout. I mean, to the point where they just told the kids not to go to school. The night before, they called and said, no school.
Man, Ruben was hoping
Wednesday.
For that. Ruben was hoping for that today.
We got those phone calls and voicemails. So we got back from just out gallivanting around. What did we do? We did movies. We took them swimming, did all this stuff. I get back home last night. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, we got all this snow here, and it's still coming down. I guess I had a little coffee. Let me get a little caffeine and go out there and shovel his driveway. So I went out and shoveled my driveway, layered up a little bit, and went to work. Just grabbed the shovel and went to town.
Yeah.
And I'm just shoveling nonstop. Worked up a good lather. Uh-huh. And by the end of it, felt good about myself. Felt like I'd done God's work, essentially. So I got done shoveling, and I even threw a little bit of salt down afterwards, too.
So I
got
to say, that's a big driveway. That's a two-car-wide driveway.
Oh, three speeds.
Oh, excuse me. That's a three. Ahoy, Paloy. That's a three-car-wide driveway.
Just want to be accurate here.
I think you did a pretty remarkable job shoveling.
Oh, well, thank you, sir.
My only issue with it is that you are such an athletically gifted man, former NFL player, that diminishes the prowess. A little bit. Like my favorite shovelers are historically the non-athletes. Okay. You know what I mean? Like that's when it's impressive. You have an inherent athletic advantage as a shoveler.
Like the guys who go out there and you're like, he could have a heart attack.
That's what I'm saying.
He works a little bit too hard.
Yeah.
That's my issue. Shane, I know you had an issue.
Oh, Danny and I have many issues.
I mean, does it help at all that the fact I've had back surgery and surgeries on both knees,
sweet
multiple
brag,
on the
dude.
Left knee.
sweet surgery brag. Who cares?
Right. I've had surgeries on the left shoulder.
Yeah, whatever.
You chose this life, brother.
Yeah. You have an inherent, it's kind of like that one-legged wrestler who made weight without the nuisance of two legs.
Yeah,
like his
right.
other musculature was bigger.
Right.
So that's like Anthony shoveling his driveway. He's like, it's an unfair advantage against the guys who are afraid of a grabber.
Sore. My knees and back were legitimately sore by the time I got done.
All right, what are your issues on the other side
of
the glass?
You want to go first, Danny?
No, I'm just going to ask, no snowblower, Ant? No, you shoveled?
I mean, it's available.
I mean, it's a palatial estate, it looks like, and no snowblower. It's a lot.
Nah, man, I feel like the snowblower is going to happen at some point.
It's going to, yeah.
But I like the opportunity to go out there and work up a decent little sweat, whether it's been raking leaves
there
in the
is.
Fall and into the winter, shoveling the driveway.
I don't know how you did things at Iowa, but, when you're a homeowner, you lead from the front, okay? Get a snowblower and then take care of your neighbors, your neighbors' sidewalks, okay? They'll appreciate you for it.
Apparently, there's some kind of issue with the sidewalks where we're like not supposed to shovel him too much. I haven't really, I haven't taken a deep dive on why not. I don't want to run afoul.
Is it like an HOA thing?
I guess. We've heard only like very periphery sort of details from a couple of folks in the surrounding area. So I don't know for sure.
Scandal. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So here are my issues. I've got a few.
And they're valid.
Number one.
I just saw it right now.
And number one, you're lying. You did not shovel this, and I think you have a heated driveway. That driveway is way too immaculate for one person to shovel. There isn't a spot of snow, Ant. So I think you have a heated driveway because I can see the condensation from where snow melted.
See the condensation.
Number two.
Is it a heated driveway?
It is not a heated driveway.
Okay.
Now, if anyone, whether it's on the text line or hit me up on social at Big Ant here, and if you have thoughts on whether or not the heated driveway is worth the investment, I am curious for outside council on this, but no, we've talked about it. It is not a heated driveway.
I think Ant just is, he has to be perfect with it because you don't get to the top of your craft playing football without attention to detail. So I think he just likes it to be perfect.
Yeah. I am remarkably meticulous with things.
You are meticulous.
Yes.
Can you tell me the date?
Of?
Today. What's today's date?
February 13th.
When's Christmas?
December 25th.
Take down your Christmas lights, Anthony. Take your Christmas lights down. They're draping in front of your Nest camera, dude.
You saw that, huh?
They're not even tight. They don't even look good, and they're still up.
Wow.
That's fair. Now, I'm not lighting them up anymore.
That's a really good catch. I'm looking at the picture now.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised he noticed that. But yes, there are lights that are still there.
Yeah, take them down, brother.
I was finally allowed to take the tree down. Once we got to February, the Christmas tree came down. Once the calendar switched to February, I was allowed to. The end of January, like whatever the last trash recycling day was in January, I was allowed to take the tree away.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we tend to be the late to put the tree up, but real late to put it down, people. That's how we roll at our house.
All right. That's weird.
These are excellent points and excellent observations. I stand by
impressed he caught the Christmas lights.
Me too.
It's not like a frontal image of the home that I sent you guys.
You never go full frontal on the home. We wouldn't want to see that. We wouldn't want to see that. But you remain too bulked up to be on my depth chart of favorite shovelers.
Okay.
Right? It's like, Tanny, you're using the snowblower, so you're never going to crack the top five.
No snowblower yet this year, but I do have a lot of elderly neighbors.
Okay,
so,
Tanny.
Yeah. Because I know people
so
also.
So you let the elderly neighbors shovel your driveway.
Of course, it's how you stay young. You know, you stay in shape that way. Thank you for your service.
Yeah. But you out there, the guy threatening to have a grabber, the guy who's still out there doing what he can do for the family and knowing that it could be your last time. You are the one. You're the hero.
The guy's out there, my high-rise amenity building that I pay thousands and thousands of dollars for a month. Those guys out there doing the hard work.
Yes.
We love those guys.
Shane, it's nice to have one of those buildings now, isn't it?
It's so nice.
Oh, my God. They take care of everything. Yeah. You do pay for it every month, boy, they take care of everything you need.
I do have a couple of people saying the heated driveway is not worth it.
Oh, there's one that says it is
worth
it.
One just said now it's well worth it.
Yeah.
Good thing is, with the way our home faces, the sun doesn't hurt either. So I've only had to shovel it a few times since we've been in the burbs.
Because we only get sun.
It helps. Yeah, yeah.
Is it southern facing?
I think east facing is what I think it is. Yeah, so sun comes up, it's right there. Oh, southern facing kind of the best way to roll?
Yeah, for sun exposure. Yeah, that's just science.
We ran across a couple of anecdotes.
Doesn't the sun rise in the east?
We ran across a couple of anecdotes regarding the, it's a good point, regarding the Bears' new coach, Ben Johnson. One paints him in a very good light. One has some concerns. Let's give voice to both. Talk about him with our guy, Ant Heron. Dave Wanstead in the 5 o'clock hour. And at 5 o'clock, we'll talk about the Cubs and Bregman and take your calls as well. Keep it right here on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.